The sermon this week is titled, Jesus and the 21st Century Family. The reading is Mark 10:18-20. Why do you call me good? Jesus answered. No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. You shall not defraud. Honor your father and mother. Teacher, he declared, all these I have kept since I was a boy.
I started with a title of The Modern Family. Google that sometime. All you'll end up with is many, many responses about a sitcom that started in the 90s and has been recycled more recently. What does a modern family look like? And I know that as I look out here, many of you will find that you come from families that are not the kind of ideal that I'm going to be talking about today. And I appreciate that. And I know that it may be a little painful for some of you. But Jesus talks about the kind of family that God always intended us to have. Today's family, blended families, single parent families, extended families. But what's really interesting is that way back in the days of the Bible, Solomon was absolutely right. Things don't really change that much. People are still the same. Think about it. Jesus spoke to a woman who had five husbands and was living with someone who wasn't even her husband at the time. So really, what we see in Jesus' day is not that different than it is in the 21st century. What is a family for, anyway? The family was God's idea. He put it in place for very special reasons. First of all, to protect the young. Children need families. He put it in place to nurture them, to bring them up in the knowledge of the Lord. He put families together to care for the elderly. And one of the things that he did, and I know that not everyone will have this experience, but for those of us who are blessed enough to have it, perhaps the greatest adventure of a lifetime. There's nothing that I can compare to the experience, the elation, and the responsibility of holding my newborn child. In that moment, you suddenly realize that this slippery little thing is a gift from God, that life he has given you care over for a time. The decisions that you make and the love that you show will shape and guide a young life. It's probably the most rewarding and simultaneously challenging thing that a person can ever do. I think perhaps even more so than marriage. But why did God do this? Why did he set up families? I think the answer lies in the fact that God created us, he says, in his image. He had within himself a perfect relationship of three in one. And when he created us, he wanted to mimic that same kind of bond. He wanted us to feel the same kind of unbreakable intimacy and love that he had within himself. And so, in his plan, a man and a woman leave their own families to set up a new family, and if blessed with children, to extend that same kind of love to this new life, just as God extends his love to us. God is a God of community. The foundation of that community is the nuclear family. If God set up family, and that makes sense, Jesus has something to say about what the family should be like. And today I want to take a look at that in terms of the idea of honor. The reading today was taken from Mark chapter 10. Honor your father and mother is the very last thing in verse 19. Jesus has been asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? That's the wrong question. It's not about what you do, it's about who you are. So Jesus goes back to first principles. Jesus knew this man who came to talk to him. He knew all about it. He says to him, "You know the commandments." Jesus understood that this man knew exactly what was right. But even before he makes the claim that I've done all these things since I was a boy, Jesus knows intimately that it's not enough to change that man. His inner guide was driven by duty and not love. Duty to a system that he thought could bring him eternal life. And as we stand there and look at that, we think, how sad for this man. So Jesus lists some of the commandments, and you might think they go from the greater to the lesser. Murder, that it starts with, is universally considered a heinous crime. By comparison, honor your father and mother seems like a lightweight. In reality, Jesus has let us know in the Sermon on the Mount that anyone who's angry with someone is in danger of the exact same kind of judgment as the murderer. Jesus is just driving home. It's less about what you do and more about who you are. Calling someone a fool, Jesus says, is judgmental and contemptuous. And the man who dishonors his parents is showing that exact same kind of spite that humans have shown for God. Contempt is a very insidious thing, and it can ruin us inside. In fact, it's more detrimental to us than to the parents that we're failing to show appropriate esteem to. Jesus considers not honoring your parents such a serious offense because it parallels the same reproach that humankind has shown for God. Contempt and reproach, they're the opposite of honor. From the garden until now, humankind has rejected God's counsel, his advice, and his friendship. If I want to figure out why my car is not performing properly, I go back to the manufacturer. If I want to know what the coverage is on my insurance, I consult the policy. But so often we fail to turn to our maker when we have something wrong inside. The psalmist laments the same thing, that the psalmist's enemies have stood against God. In Psalm 74, verse 18, we read, "Remember how the enemy has mocked you, Lord, how foolish people have reviled your name." And in reference to people who fail to give justice, Isaiah says, "Therefore, as tongues of fire lick up straw and as dry grass sinks down in the flames, so their roots will decay and their flowers blow away like dust. For they have rejected the law of the Lord Almighty and spurned the word of the Holy One of Israel." Why are these people's lives so dry and hollow that they'll blow away? Because they don't honor God. Paul sums it up for parents and children in Ephesians chapter 6. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth." This is exactly how God treats us. His counsel is to do what is right so that we can be our best selves. Why is it important for children to obey their parents? Because it'll go well with you and you will be happier. We like to tell children, act your age. Be more mature. Grow up. But Jesus says no. Jesus says the kingdom belongs to those who, like children, are fully able to trust and honor God. If we can honor our parents, we're working on being able to honor God. And in just the same way that Jesus calls us to honor parents, he calls us to honor our spouse. I said earlier that the parent-child relationship may be even more of a responsibility than marriage, but certainly marriage is of utmost importance. If we learn about being loved from our parents, we learn about giving love from our spouses. It's fundamentally right to honor parents. It's also fundamentally right to honor our spouse. If you want to turn to chapter 19 of Matthew, I'm going to be looking at a passage there, beginning in verse 2. Large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. Some Pharisees came to test him. They asked, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason?" "Haven't you read," he replied, "that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female and said, 'For this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh.' So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate." Matthew lets us know that, yet again, this encounter is more about trying to trap Jesus, looking for a way to accuse or undermine him than to really get at truth. The question begins with, is it lawful to divorce a wife? Some translations include for a man or for a husband to divorce a wife. That's actually an interpretation. The manuscript doesn't include them. It just says, is it lawful to divorce a wife? I'm not sure if in 21st century Canada, we shouldn't go back to the original reading that doesn't include that, because clearly in Canada, it's legal for a wife to marry a wife. But why were only wives being divorced? In Gentile law, it was permissible for a woman to divorce a man. But in Jewish law, only the man had that right. And this double standard was not lost on Jesus. He refuses to debate levels of misconduct by a woman that might justify the Pharisees saying, is that reasonable for a divorce? The Pharisees had asked for any and every reason in the NIV as a source of divorce. Do you suppose that they were just looking to try and trap Jesus? Think about this. When John accused Herod of adultery, he ended up being executed. This is shortly after that. They may well have been trying to pit Jesus against Herod, hoping that Herod would do the same kind of thing. Wouldn't it just suit their aims to have Jesus taken out of the picture by Herod so they wouldn't have to get their hands dirtied in doing it? Instead of going to that level, though, Jesus takes the discussion to an entirely new level. Haven't you read? They were created male and female, and their union would establish one new entity, a new family. The word that Jesus uses to talk about this union is literally glued or bonded or cemented. That's how tightly they are to be together. Of all the creatures in the garden, it was not right that Adam alone among them did not have a suitable companion. And so a suitable companion was created, not from something new, not from something different, but from his very person. Taken from Adam, both male and female were now incomplete in a way that only the marriage union could restore. Have you ever watched or listened to your spouse and thought, that's right, that's just how I feel? And then you remember, that's why I married this person, because they complete me in a way that no one else does. Jesus says this is because they've been joined back together. Welded is another term, if you like, by God into the kind of union that recalls the relationship present in the Trinity. A woman by the name of Linda K. Burton says this: our two hands are similar to each other, but not exactly the same. In fact, they're exact opposites, but they complement each other and are suited to each other. Working together, they are stronger. So this God-made bond in marriage is sacred in God's eyes. Jesus says no one has the right to break it. Not an outsider, not even one of the participants in the marriage. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her away? Jesus replied, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard, but it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. The disciples said to him, if this is the situation between a husband and wife, it is better not to marry. Jesus replied, not everyone can accept this word, but only those to whom it has been given. So the Pharisees come right back and say, Moses commanded that a certificate be given that validated the right to a divorce. And again, Jesus sees their duplicity and he corrects it. Moses permitted it. He did not command it. And it was due to your hard hearts. It's not what God intended. You wanted a way to marry another, a newer, shinier model. Is it any different in the 21st century than to what Moses was dealing with back then? Jesus wants us to realize that God ordained one man, one woman for life, with each spouse going out of their way to serve the other in the best way they could. It's the way to completeness that's modeled by heaven. The Spirit and the Son both give themselves to the Father, who completes the circle by honoring them with grace and power. Jesus says, you show your honor for your spouse by living in harmony with the vow you took to live united with that person for life. So as children, we're encouraged to honor our parents, at least in part, in gratitude for what they give us, because as children, we're very needy. As spouses, we honor each other by committing to the marriage, this new two become one above ourselves. Finally, Jesus says, your worship is only real when you honor God above all else. Matthew chapter 15. Then some of the Pharisees and teachers of the law came to Jesus from Jerusalem and asked, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat. Jesus replied, and why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, honor your father and mother. There it is again. And anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that which might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God in the NIV, they are not to honor their father or mother with it. Thus, you nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites! Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. Once again, Jesus comes up against the Pharisees. He's accused of breaking their tradition. His disciples are not performing the ritual washings. Not God's command, but a practice of men. So he fires right back. Again, he feels no need to respond to them on their level, and instead points to their supported practice of Korban. You may have seen that. Older translations of Bibles transliterated that word. It does mean, as the NIV says, given over to God. It was basically a solemn pledge to devote something to God such that it was set apart and couldn't be used for anything else. This is even better than your Sunday china. It would never get taken out of the china cabinet. But the sad truth is, where it was intended to honor God, it was being used to dishonor parents. Though parents might be in need, anything that was Korban could not be used to help them. And so Jesus condemns with force the fact that they're using the vow to God to override the needs of their parents. In fact, this is the first time that Jesus comes out and uses a term as strong as hypocrites in talking about them. But Jesus does ask us to devote something irrevocably to him our entire lives. Mark chapter 12 and verse 30. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength." In John chapter 13 and verse 34, Jesus says, "A new command I give you, love one another." Wait, that's not a new command. That's been a command forever. But then he finishes it with this: "As I have loved you." That's the new part of the command. Love others as I have loved you. Then you'll know how to love God. Children, honor your parents because they know what is best for you. Young adults, honor your parents because they continue to love you as they always have and pray for you. Aged people, honor your parents for the heritage they've given you and entrusted to pass on to others. Young husbands and wives, honor each other because that builds intimacy and completes you with your spouse. Parents, honor each other because of the impact it will have on your children. Golden age couples, honor each other out of gratitude for the gift of another of their lives. Young people, honor God for the future he has given you. Grown-ups, honor God for his unfailing love for you day after day. And elderly, honor God as you come closer to the day when you will be with God. The modern day family is not so different from that of Jesus' time. The most important law is to love and honor God. We learn and build on that by honoring our parents, and if we're blessed enough to have a marriage, our spouse. When we honor our parents and our spouse in our most fundamental community of family, we honor God, and vice versa. When we honor God, we are more able to honor those around us. There's a synchronicity in this that Jesus points us to for a truly fulfilled and happy life. There's a happy life available here, but it also prepares us for joining to that original family, the family of God, eternally.
Thanks for listening to this week's sermon. The Beamsville Church of Christ meets Sunday mornings at 4900 John Street, Beamsville, Ontario. We have classes for all ages at 9:30, and the worship service begins at 10:30. You can subscribe to podcasts through Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music Store, or your favorite podcast app. Just search for Beamsville. All our past sermons and more information about our congregation are available at beamsvillechurchofchrist.ca.